In this hour, we're going to focus on technology. We're going to look at how technology has been changing our lives and really has taken over in the last 12 months because of COVID. And also what's likely to happen in 2021. I'm joined by Fevzi Turkalp, who's editor of GadgetDetective.com. He's at GadgetDetective on Twitter. And if you have a question of a technological nature, then you're welcome to call. If you have a problem with a Zoom or a drone or a computer or any other tech question, you want some buying advice, you're welcome to call. We did do a session like this at Christmas. And to be honest, I was expecting mostly tweets and texts because that tends to be what happens when we talk about technological things. But actually, the lines were really busy. So we've asked Fevzi back for another session, and this is your chance. So if you want to get on with a tech question, then call now 0345 6060 973. By all means, of course, text as well, 84850, and tweet at LBC. And Fevzi, good morning to you.
Morning. Happy New Year.
And to you. Thanks very much for joining us. So, trends for 2021, then, I guess it's going to be more of the same. As I was saying, technology has been huge and taken over many aspects of life. It feels like it's just all speeded up. Do you think that's going to continue?
Yeah. So I think a lot of the trends that were in train already, like remote working and Zoom and things like that, just took off more and more. And we will see those things. I don't think those things will go away now that the technological genie is out of the bottle. We will see companies deciding that they don't need as much office space as they needed before, and therefore they will trust their workers more to work more at home. Because I think there was always this tacit suspicion that people at home don't do any work. And now, you know, and there may be an element of that, but actually productivity can actually be higher even if you do fewer hours, not least because, you know, you're not traveling in and out of work all the time. So the challenges are more for the workers at home, I think, to get a sort of a division between work and social life when your workplace is that. And you know, I've been working from home for many, many years, and I've always struggled with that, frankly. You know, having an ISDN studio 6 feet from your bed is not necessarily an ideal thing to do. But I think we'll see more of that. And also, we've had a lot of remote learning, haven't we, with students at various ages being expected to learn online. And again, you know, by and large, that's been difficult, but we've seen that it can work, and I think that we're going to see a lot more of that. So you'll get more university courses and so forth offered online going forward. So I think some of the changes that have been there for the pandemic will stay long after the pandemic has gone.
What about the actual tech? Do you see changes there?
Yeah, I do. And you know, when you said more of the same, and that's usually correct. You know, there's certain trends that you see continuing, like artificial intelligence will get more intelligent and, you know, so forth. But there was one big change that happened at the end of 2020, which is that Apple did something that it hasn't done for a long time, which is innovate. You know, under Steve Jobs, Apple was an innovative company. And I think that there can be a criticism leveled at it that it sat on its collective laurels for a number of years after that. What they did was that they produced new processors for their Apple Mac computers. And instead of using the Intel processors, which they've been using for many, many years, they took the processors that they've been developing over more than a decade for iPhone and iPad. They adapted it and put it into these desktop and laptop computers, the Apple Macs. And what we've found has been quite revolutionary. These things are incredibly powerful. They're outperforming machines with Intel processors in it in the Apple Mac range, which are much more expensive. So they're sort of eating the lunch of their sort of more expensive Macs at the moment. And they run very cool, which means that you don't have to have a lot of fans blowing, and the battery life is astounding. So if I tell you, excuse me, that the new MacBook Pro 13-inch computer with the Apple Silicon M1 chip inside it can do 20 hours battery life. Imagine you now have laptops that can do 20 hours of battery life. You know, that's days of... Days,
so what's so special about this chip then? How have they done it?
So it points to the fact that in its turn, Intel was sitting on its laurels. Intel every year made more powerful computers by just adding more cores, that's to say processors on the same chip. But in doing that, it consumed more and more energy, more and more heat, and shorter battery life, louder and louder fans. What Apple have been doing is, because they've been making chips, processor chips for their iPhones and iPads, there's no room for fans in those. There isn't a large thermal envelope. There's not a lot of space for, you know, air to heat to dissipate. So they've had to generate these chips that are based on what's called ARM technology, which is a different type of processor to the Intel ones. And what they've therefore been able to do is just leverage these high power, low consumption chips into their desktops. And it's been remarkable. It's been a revelation. And Intel and AMD, the main competitors in this space, haven't really got anything to answer this with, not for anywhere near the price point. You know, their laptops are running hotter. They're not generally as fast. And this is only the first generation of desktop processors. Apple will replace all of its Macs in the next year or so with their own chips. So what I think this is going to do is, it could actually be an existential threat to Intel in the long term, because it will either have to respond and pull its technological finger out and produce something that competes, or it will fade away. You know, because Intel, although it's been king of processors for decades, you know, doesn't have its name written on the throne. You know, it's only there until something better comes along. And what this may mean, and we spoke last week about how Macs are, you know, never been more than 5 or 7% of the computer market. I think this could change things, actually. I think that some people who aren't in love with Apple or Mac OS, but will just see that the MacBook Air has no fans at all. It's completely silent. I mean, it's incredible. A laptop computer that's fast and yet completely silent. The MacBook Pro has a fan, but it very rarely kicks in and has a 20-hour battery life. I mean, people will be drawn to this sort of thing, combined with the fact that people are hacked off with Microsoft Windows these days and looking for alternatives. I'm not saying it will be an exodus, but I do think that there will be a shift, and it's particularly serious for Intel. I think that, you know, they could be in trouble going forward if they don't innovate.
So Apple have made one of these announcements that this is really going to change the world, and for once they're right.
Yeah, I know. Apple, the sort of kings of hyperbole, actually were somewhat understated when they made their claims for this. And people didn't believe them because they came up with all these vague graphs with no numbers on the axes, and they just thought, you know, it's Apple just, you know, overclaiming. But you see, Intel hacked off Apple for too many years, because every time Intel would fail to produce its processors on time and they would be, you know, thermally too hot, it was a real problem. And in the end, they push Apple too far. And Apple said, well, no, we can actually do this ourselves. And it's not the first time they did that, because before they used, Intel processors, they were using power PCs made by IBM, the processors from IBM. So they've done this change before, but what Apple have done really well, what they've done really well is that they have produced something called Rosetta 2, which is a piece of software that can take programs that were written for Intel chips, translate them in only a few moments into something that will run on an Apple silicon chip. And even though it's being translated, it still runs faster than when it's running native on the chips that it was designed for. So this is incredible. They're on very rare points in technological history when something is just uniformly better than what went before it, and that's what Apple have done.
Right. Fevzi Turkalp is here. He's at Gadget Detective on Twitter. If you've got a question, don't worry if it's not a complicated one, because the simpler questions, the better.
Clive Bull on LBC.
And we're talking about technology, what's to come, and your questions, 0345 6060 973. Fevzi Turkalp is here. And a couple of questions coming in already on text and tweet. Henry says, what headphones do you both recommend? Ideally, for a home studio, which I could also use for working in radio. They need to be high quality. Well, I don't know what you're wearing, Fevzi. I can look at the ones I'm wearing. These are Beyer Dynamic, and they are, what is it? What are they? DT250s, they are. If that means anything to anybody, I'd recommend them. In fact, this is my own pair, because in these days of COVID, we like to not share microphone muffs and headphones. So we all have our own. What are you wearing, Fevzi?
Which are amazing. So,
we missed the name of those.
Sennheiser.
Sennheiser.
Right. HD25. So also German. These are both German brands, Sennheiser and Beyer Dynamic. So the Beyer Dynamics are interesting because for the longest time, for decades in radio studios, almost every studio used Beyer Dynamic DT100s, which are still being made and still popular. They're not great for listening to hi-fi, but they are good for radio. Then you had the DT150s and 250s, as Clive is wearing. All of these are great. I think I'm right in saying that your ones are an over-the-ear design. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So they have the benefit of keeping external sounds from getting in,
but also
stopping the sound bleeding from the earphone back into the microphone and causing feedback. So whatever you use in a studio, they need to be what are called closed back headphones. That's to say that they have a closed back. They don't let sound out easily. Again, not so great for listening to hi-fi because you don't get the presence that you get, you know, the airiness of having open back headphones. But for you, Beyer Dynamic DT250, 100, fine. I personally go for the Sennheiser HD25s, which are also used by DJs, who play in clubs and so forth.
Mm.
And they also are closed back, but rather than being over the ear, they are on the ear. They sit on the ear. They're much smaller cup, and for me, they're much more comfortable. Plus, the HD25s have got a really good trick, is that on the left side is a hinge, and you can actually swivel the earpiece away from your ear. So if you want to hear through your left ear what's going on in the studio around you and still be able to monitor with your right ear, you can do that without having to push the headphones skew-whiff, as it were. You know, as you often see radio people just sort of having to twist the headphones so one ear becomes free of the headphones. But with the HD25s, you don't have to do that. Plus, the design is modular. This pair of HD25s I've been using for more than 15 years. In that time, the cushioning parts have worn out, but you can actually just replace them. It's like a Meccano set. Every bit of the headphones are replaceable from the cords to the headband to the actual the electronics that drive the sound in each ear. So I think they're great, and you can pick them up for about £100, which I think is good
money. Sounds good. I've got some of these AirPod things, which are noise-cancelling.
Yeah.
And I've never tried noise-cancelling before, but it's absolutely amazing. You stick these things in your ear, and you can have noise outside,
and
it disappears.
Yeah.
And as somebody who does nighttime and sleeps partly in the day, I don't need earplugs because I can actually put these things in and they cancel out the noise. I don't know how they do it, but it's amazing.
Yeah, so the way that, yeah, they are very good. And so you it's two types of noise cancelling. There's what's called active and passive. Passive just means there's a wodge of material over your ears that stops the sounds from getting in. Active noise cancelling works differently. There are microphones on the outside of the headset that listen to the ambient sound, the sound around you in the room. And it then listens to that, and there is a program and electronics in there that say, what do I need to do to cancel out those waves? And it produces a wave which is contrary to the ambient sound wave, and it cancels it. You know, like you may have seen, so if you look at the sea, and sometimes you have waves coming in at two angles, and then there's a dead spot in the water where there are actually no waves on either side. And what's happened is the crest of one wave has cancelled out the trough of the other, and you get flat water. In the same way, you can cancel out sound where you just make sure that the crest of the ambient sound peak is met by an equal trough, and it cancels it out, and then you get relative quiet. And it's very clever technology, and the more microphones you have on the outside and the smarter the electronics, the better it is. Bose do very good ones. That's Bose, do some very good noise cancelling headphones. They're not cheap. Anker through the Soundcore brand do some sort of more affordable ones, which are also very good. But what I would always say to you about any choice of headphones, because they're such a personal choice, not just to do with quality, it's also to do with how well they fit in or on your ear and how comfortable they are. Buy them from somewhere that you can return them. Get somewhere that will take them back after 30 days, no questions asked, and give them a good go. Because, you know, the tech specification will only get you so far with headphones.
I wasn't expecting this, but we've got lots of comments and questions coming in about chips now, because we were talking about chips. But we'll come to those in a moment. Let's go to Warren in Northwood. Warren, good morning.
Good morning. Happy New Year, Clivey.
Yes, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, mate. Thanks. Fezzy, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Long
Happy
time
New
Year. No speak.
Yes, I remember you. How are you?
I do, yes. Fine, thank you. Yeah, a few years older, but there you go. Question regarding, I know that you're not going to be able to solve the miracle, former miracle of being able to solve a problem that I've got about when to buy a computer, especially as it's Apple, because they don't even tell their employees what they're doing until the day before they're releasing it. I know all that. But my question is, I'm hanging on for a new MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
And I really don't want to go and buy one and then for the following week them to announce they're putting their new chips in them.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to hold on. MacBook Rumors says that they usually update them around October, and they didn't do it in October, so it's really due an update, the MacBook right. Pro. Because I'm going to probably create my own specification and spend quite a bit of money on one, because mm-hmm. I use Photoshop and Lightroom a yep. lot for processing. I want to increase the RAM from 16 to 32. When I buy it as well. So you can imagine it's going to cost a couple of grand more, you know, 2.5 grand okay. maybe. So the last thing that I really want is for them to change it the week after I buy it. But knowing my luck, that's probably what they'll do. But okay. is there any heads up from your contact?
Yeah, I can give you quite a lot of guidance on this, I think, Warren. First of all, let me say to you that the 13-inch MacBook Pro has already been changed over to the Apple M1 chip. But you're after the 16-inch. Okay, so the 16-inch will probably come second or third quarter of this year. And it will have the M1 chip in it, or it will have maybe an M1X chip in it, which will be a bit faster. So the existing Apple chips, so first of all, you're not going to get a lot of upgradability. You're going to have to buy what you need from the outset. Okay, you're not going to be able to add RAM to them afterwards, because one of the benefits is it's what they call a system on a chip. Everything, including the memory, sits on the same chip, and the RAM is shared. That's the system memory is shared between the processor and the graphic circuitry and other parts, and that's part of why it's so fast. But it means you can't upgrade it later. So I think what they will do is they'll launch a 16-inch MacBook Pro, as I say, second or third quarter of this year. It will be faster than the existing M1 chips, which is great. You will get certainly a choice of 8 or 16. You might get a choice of 32 gigabytes of RAM as well. Bear in mind that there's, although they can't perform magic, that the memory is used quite efficiently. There's a lot of memory compression that goes on with Macs, and there are benefits from the integrated approach, which means that you might not need as much RAM as you did under the Intel equivalent. Right?
Okay.
I wouldn't now at this point buy an Intel-based Mac because they're on the way out. And, you know, although they'll be supported for a few years, you're going to start having your options limited. Also, that wait time of 6 months or so is a good thing, because it gives the rest of the industry a chance to update its software and make it specifically run well on the new chips, because at the moment a lot of them are running through this conversion process. So I would say, just when they offer it to you, just buy the best spec that they offer, given what the sort of uses that you're going to go for. It will be plenty fast enough. It'll outperform any MacBook that has gone before it, I promise you, and it will give any of the existing iMacs a run for their money. All right, so it will run really well. But I think the reason why there is this delay and they're not replacing all the machines with their own processors at once is they've done all the entry-level stuff. But even the £699 Mac Mini is outperforming machines costing £2,000 in their own range.
Wow.
And that, you know, they've eaten, Apple have eaten their own lunch, as it were. It's quite revolutionary, you know. But let it settle down. Let them produce their 16-inch version. It's going to have incredible battery life. It's going to be much cooler. It will have fans, but I predict they won't kick in very often. And when they do, they will be quiet. It will outperform anything else. So certainly don't buy anything with an Intel processor in it just now, unless you're desperate.
Okay, there you go, Warren. Thank you very much. I mentioned some comments on chips. Here's one text. Can you ask your guest, wasn't the ARM chips used by Apple originally a British-developed technology that was then recently sold off?
Yeah, it makes me really sad when I see this, because so much of our technology, our AI businesses and the ARM. So ARM actually grew out of the people that did the BBC Micro, if you go back enough years. The BBC Micro wasn't based on ARM. So these ARM chips are what are called reduced instruction set chips. They have more basic language that they interpret as they run, but because they have fewer commands that they need to understand, they can deal with them much more quickly. Almost every mobile device, your mobile phone and your tablet, almost all of them contain ARM chips because of this, the fact that they are quick, but they don't use a lot of power and they don't generate a lot of heat. But now those characteristics are now being modified and built into desktop and laptop machines. So you're getting silent laptops with super fast performance. But yeah, you're right. ARM was bought by a foreign company. Interestingly enough, even Apple doesn't own the ARM technology that it uses. It buys a license which allows it to use ARM technology to design its own chips. And the benefit that Apple has is because it designs the hardware and the software, it can achieve a much higher degree of integration, whereas an Intel processor has to work in, you know, any manufacturer's machine. So Apple have the benefit of controlling what they call the stack, everything that goes into the machine.
Another comment here on Twitter. These new ARM chips in MacBooks sound great. I love silent computers. But as they are combined processing and graphics units, how powerful is the graphics component? And if it is, isn't that a threat to graphics card producers as well?
Yes. So, okay, that's a great question. So the first Apple Silicon chips that have been produced are what are called the M1 series. And they have been put into the entry-level Macs, the entry-level MacBook Air, Mac Mini and MacBook Pros. They have much better integrated graphics, much, much better than the graphics that were integrated into Intel chips. So Intel make processors that have a certain graphics capability built into them. That's fine, but it's really poor. Yeah. So the Mac Mini, for example, always had poor graphics because of this. They cannot match the best dedicated graphics cards that are in computers at the moment. But they will. This is the first generation. I predict within a year, 2 years, certainly within 3 years, companies like AMD and NVIDIA will be really worried. They should be worried now if they can see what's happening to them, because they could find themselves being made obsolete by these technologies. It's a bit like the people who used to make the best horse-drawn carriages in the world, and they were king of the world, and then suddenly the internal combustion engine came and the game changed. And I think NVIDIA and AMD, who are the main manufacturers of graphics circuits, they're not dead in the water, but they're going to have to up their game, you know, because people aren't going to buy graphics cards that consume 150 watts of power or more.
Well, there we are. Fevzi Turkalp's here. If you've got a question, 0345 6060 973. I did say we're getting lots of texts about chips because we're talking about chips. Now I'm getting texts about chips, like Michael in Stoke saying, ask your expert whether he prefers red or brown sauce with his chips. I suppose it was inevitable. It was going to happen.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC with Clive Bull.
Talking about technology at the moment, Fevzi Turkalp is here, who is at Gadget Detective on Twitter. And if you want some advice, do call. In fact, there's lots of calls coming in, so we'll try and whiz through a few more questions. Sarah's in Hampstead. Hello, Sarah.
Oh, hello, Clive.
Hello, what would you like to say?
Hi, I used to phone you when you had your one-minute wonder.
Oh, okay.
Many years ago.
We could do that again.
Lazio and Wimbledon. I wish you would
right.
have that again.
You've got 1 minute starting now. What's your question?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm elderly. Well,
that's 5 seconds gone already.
I have a tablet. Right. That's all. And then I'll put it on to look up something.
Yeah.
And do one or two things. And then I would really like some advice on how not to then become addicted to watching things on YouTube, where I might watch something and then, you know, how they bring something that's similar.
Yeah.
And then before I know it, I've been on for 2 or 3 hours and it really annoys me that I've wasted that time.
Gosh, that's a fascinating question, Sarah. And actually, I know exactly what you mean. I did that the other night, just looking at music videos on YouTube, and another one pops up. And before you know it, as you say, you can literally spend 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
Presumably, they design the algorithm to suck you in like that, Fevzi.
Yes, because the more time you're watching, the more of their ads you're exposed to, the more money that they make. The YouTube algorithm is the stuff of folklore. It's very clever, but it's also the reason why people get sent down rabbit holes of, you know, conspiracy theories or something. Because you watch one thing that's slightly conspiratorial, and then you get a whole bunch of other ones, and increasingly so. And before you know it, you're voting for certain presidents. So I think there are, Sarah, a couple of ways to approach this. One is technological. You didn't say what sort of tablet you have, but it's one that runs Android. There are tools in the Android operating system which are essentially parental controls, and I don't mean to insult you when I say this, but it is possible with modern versions of the operating system to first of all produce statistics about how long you spend inside particular apps and websites, and also under some circumstances limit it to certain times of day. Now obviously there'd be nothing to stop you going in and undoing those shackles, but it will just bring you up against a sort of barrier. The other thing that I do is I use a countdown timer on my phone, and I say I'll give myself 15 minutes, and then when it goes beep, 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 then I'll try not to go beyond that. And it is just that sort of stimulus to take you out of the concentration on the screen and just bring you back to the real world.
Technology could help somehow. There should be a way of technology intervening.
And
in the
is.
Same way, like my Apple Watch, and I never thought I'd wear a tech watch, but I do now.
Mm.
And the Apple Watch I found is really good for fitness because it reminds me to get up.
Yes. Yes.
And go for a walk. You've been sitting down for too long, which is fantastic.
If you've been sitting for 50 minutes, it'll tell you to get up. And my one tells me to, and you know it tells you to wash your hands as well. And it times you and it gives you a thumbs up, which some people will find kind of patronizing.
That's a new thing. We should just explain. If you happen to wear one of these watches, because of COVID, presumably, if you wash your hands, it detects whether you've spent the full 20 seconds or not and tells you if you haven't.
Although,
I'm surprised it doesn't sing happy birthday twice.
Yeah, I found it slightly counterproductive because I used to wash my hands for a good 30 seconds.
Ah.
And now I get a bing telling me that I've managed
excessive.
It. What do you expect?
What is proved to me is, and we're going slightly off point here, but it proved to me that I wasn't doing 20 seconds, but I was doing about 14 or 15.
Yes.
And a lot of people think it's when you brush your teeth, you're meant to brush for 2 minutes.
Yes.
Apparently, the average we think we're doing 2 minutes. The average is 42 seconds.
Yeah, and you're right. So my toothbrush, for example, not only has a 2 minute timer, but it sort of breaks the vibration every 30 seconds. So you do sort of lower outer set, lower inner set, you know, all of that.
How does the watch know that you're washing your hands?
So it's quite clever. It's not foolproof, by the way, but the way in which it tries to work it out is the movement of the hand and the sound of the water running.
Oh, really?
But it is not perfect because sometimes when I'm using hand gel, the movements of the hand are kind of similar, and it has been fooled. But, you know, I don't use hand gel for a full 20 seconds, so then it tells me I've failed. And I tell it it's failed, and you know, we sort of go our separate ways for a while. But I just think that it depends on your personality. You see, it's a bit like the people who swear at sat navs and get all uptight when the machine tells them where to go, whereas someone like me just appreciates the help. And so I'm I wouldn't say I acquiesce to it, but I just appreciate the input, as it were.
What can help Sarah in this regard, then, not watching too many YouTubes?
So as I say, there's things in, and this will apply also to people who use Apple tablets as well. There are parental controls that, in the first instance, can be used to give you information. And information is important, because if you see that you spent 3 hours on YouTube in one day, then that in itself may be a bit of a wake-up call. The other things that you can do is you can set the hours between the times of day when certain apps are usable. Okay, and the third thing you can do is you can actually block certain apps or limit the time that you can use them. Now, all of that presupposes that you're not so addicted that you then go in and just release the settings, because obviously, you know, you're using parental control settings, but you are your own, in this context, your own parent. But I mean, those are fine. But as I say, an external, what they call a Pomodoro timer, which is essentially a countdown timer, I think that's really good, because you can just prop it up on your phone, keep an eye on it when you're on your tablet. Interestingly, use your phone to not use the tablet. There are also games, by the way, that reward you for not picking up your device. So there's one that allows you to grow trees in a virtual forest. Mm. And every time you pick up your device, it stunts the growth of the trees. So actually, the game on the phone is not to touch the phone and not to use it, and it's sort of self-discipline. But I other than that, I mean, I have my sympathies with you, Sarah, because these devices are these algorithms and these apps and these devices themselves are designed from the get-go to be addictive, and we are all victims to the rush, the endorphin and serotonin rush that we get from notifications binging and all the rest of it. You know, they're designed to be addictive because that's how they make their money.
Sarah, thank you. Sandy's in Richmond. Hello, Sandy.
Hi, happy new year, James.
And to you.
Thank you, and to all your listeners. My question is short and sweet. I was going to buy a MacBook Pro tomorrow.
Okay.
I was, and then I heard your conversation. I'm so timely, so thank you for that. I can afford to wait for 6 months. I think, going to buy the iPad Pro tomorrow, unless you tell me that I should sit tight.
If you are going to buy the 12.9-inch one, you should certainly sit tight. The first quarter of this year, we're expecting a new one. There is a possibility of the 11-inch being updated, but I think the 12.9 is a safer bet at the moment. So it all depends. With regards, Sandy, to the MacBook Pro, the 13-inch MacBook Pro has already been updated, and that is a safe purchase. As long as you don't want the high-end 13-inch, because the low-end 13-inch has been updated. So it depends on the size of the screen. There's a 13 and the 16-inch. By the way, at some point in the next year, we will see the 13-inch being replaced by a 14-inch screen as well, where they'll have the same size computer, but the frame around the screen will be narrower and will allow for a bigger screen. So depends what you need. But what size of iPad Pro did you have in mind?
So my preference, my first choice was 16-inch, but I was only going for the 13-inch because it's got the M1 in it. But since the 16-inch is going to be upgraded anyway, I'd rather hold out. But it sounds like the 13-inch is going to change anyway, it's going to get upgraded
I think what they'll do is they'll keep the M1-based 13-inch that's there at the moment, but they'll produce a higher-end one. The ones that are, the MacBook Pros that are there at the moment have only got two USB-C ports, and they're both on one side, which is very annoying because that's how you power the device, and they're both on the left side, so if you want to power it from the right, you can't. The newer ones, the upmarket 13-inch and the new 16s, will have, I believe, four ports, and as well as upgraded internals as well. So I would, unless you're desperate for one now, I would wait for it and either have a better 13-inch or one of the new 16-inches. With regard to the iPad, do you know what screen size you wanted, Sandy?
It was going to be 12.9.
Yeah, definitely. Do not buy a 12.9-inch now. You will kick yourself within a few weeks if you do.
Yeah. Oh, you can't buy anything, Sandy.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's worth the wait. I would have kicked myself otherwise.
Yeah. I tell you what you will get with the new 12.9. You will get a new type of screen technology, which will appear for the first time in Apple products, which is something called mini LED. and it will give you a lot of the benefits of a screen type called OLED. So in other words, it will have a much better dynamic range. The blacks on the screen will be blacker, the whites will be whiter, the whole thing will be more vibrant, as well as the fact that the processor will be faster and there'll be more storage and a few other changes as well. I just don't think, you know, unless you're desperate, if you said to me, I'm going to a trade show and I must have it, you know, this week, I definitely wouldn't buy one now. I think it will be first quarter of this year and possibly the early part of it.
Okay, good luck, Sandy. Thank you. On that subject as well, another quick text here. Thanks for the advice about the Mac chips. Would your advice be similar for the iMac? Any idea when the desktop range will be updated and will it be worth the wait?
Yeah, so the iMac, which is the all-in-one Apple desktop computer, it essentially looks like a screen on a stand, but the computer's built into the curved back of the screen. So the iMacs will have a larger screen and a smaller screen variety. The smaller screen variety will be replaced first with the new Apple chips. That, again, is probably around second, third quarter of this year. And then later on, the 27-inch version will be replaced. So the 24-inch will go first, and then the 27th. And it was interesting that when Apple did their last update, they didn't really touch the 24-inch because they knew it was about to be replaced by the Apple Silicon. The reason why the bigger and more powerful Macs are coming later is because they're still perfecting and manufacturing and producing the new higher generation chips. So we've got M1 at the moment. The next generation might be M1X, followed by M2. So they will have more processing cores, they will have more graphics cores, and particularly with the 27-inch iMac, they can have quite powerful dedicated graphics in there. So they're not going to want to replace it with something that's not as good, hence the delay for two or three quarters.
Just going back to Sarah, who was watching YouTube all the time, Craig says, why doesn't she just turn off autoplay in the YouTube app and then it will stop playing straight after each video?
Yeah, that's true, but it will still give you
won't it?
Yeah, it will give you a panel of other videos that you can watch along. Depends if you're in the app, say on the right hand side, you'll get a column of all the similar related videos. And when you refresh your homepage, it will refresh with things that are pertinent to what you've already watched. So yes, it won't autoplay, but frankly, you know, I don't have autoplay on mine, but I'm still tapping away.
Yes.
At the next one and then the next one. And then I suddenly know a great deal about a subject that I hadn't even heard of just an hour
ago. Exactly. I mean, it does have its upsides as well. It can be very entertaining and educational. Fevzi is here, Fevzi Turkup, and we'll take some more questions in a moment.
This is LBC with Clive Bull.
LBC, we're talking technology at the moment. Fevzi Turkup is with me. If you have a question, do call 0345 6060 973. We'll see if we can squeeze in a couple more before three. David in St Albans. Hello, David.
Hi there, Clive.
Hi.
I'll just say hello to Fevzi. Last time I spoke to you, you had a programme on Saturday morning on Sky, on LBC.
Oh, yes, I remember Weekend Wireless Show. Gosh, that
is going back. And what's your question for us this morning?
Well, just before that, I won a Palm Pilot from you.
Oh!
And it still works.
Wow.
It must be 15 years ago, I think. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Amazing.
I was doing it as a child, David, I have to tell you that. Yeah, I was very young at the time.
A little quick tip for YouTube videos. You can play them fast or slower speed, and they're still audible.
Very good. Yes, very good. Some people just beat about the bush.
To slow speakers.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for a well-known American election to finish, so I get a bit of a break.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the tip. That's an excellent tip, actually. Thank you.
Right. The question, I've got a solid-state drive in my PC. I forget, several hundred gigabytes, but I'm just wondering how full should I let it get before it starts to deteriorating in performance.
Okay, is this in the Windows PC?
It is, yeah, Windows 10, yeah.
I would say leave at the minimum 10% free, ideally 20.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yes. And the reason for that is, I mean, it sounds like you're aware of this, David, but I'll just explain to other people. So the SSD is the replacement, the modern replacement for the hard disk drive. It is where the operating system Windows lives. It's where all the programs live and all the data that you produce, like your photos and videos and everything. But it is not just there for your things to be stored. It's also used by the Windows operating system as a temporary storage area. There's something there, for example, called a swap file. And if you use up all the space and deprive the swap file of enough space, that in itself slows down the use of the computer until it finally, because when you run out of RAM memory, it uses the hard disk instead. But if it can't then come to the hard disk, it'll slow down and things will start becoming unstable and even crashing. So I would say try and leave 20%. SSDs, solid state drives, are getting cheaper and cheaper. If it's getting really tight, move some things off it, and if you really can't cope with that size and still leave 10 to 20%, upgrade the drive.
There you go, David. Great to talk to you. Can't send you a Palm Pilot this time, but very nice to hear from you.
Palm Pilot.
Jim in Cumbria says, Clive, wait till your health insurance, etc., is linked to your phone fitness apps. It's not Black Mirror. It's already happening.
Yeah, that's the big worry, isn't it? That one of these, you know, like Fitbit or one of these companies, we're not such a problem with Apple. I don't think anyone's going to buy Apple anytime soon. But if an insurance company were to buy one of these fitness type companies and get all their data, and therefore all our data, then that can be an issue. I mean, I thought about this carefully, and I thought, okay, This is a real possibility that can happen. On the other hand, there are tangible health benefits that I can have by being able to measure my fitness and do something about it where it's lacking. And I decided that I'd rather improve my fitness by utilizing the technology. And, you know, not, I wouldn't say don't worry about the other thing, but to me, the health was the more important thing.
Absolutely. I'm just checking my heart rate at the moment. It's actually calmed down a little bit in this hour, which is good news. Brenda's in Chelsea. Hello, Brenda.
Oh, hello, Clive.
Hello, Brenda. Well, what's your question?
I'm 71 years old, and I've only used a computer once in my life,
right.
And I want to buy a laptop. Do you think this is a good idea?
Brenda, can I ask what it is that you want to be able to do with the laptop, please?
Windows 10 and, order from catalogues, online, and search for holidays.
Right. I would say to you that although you can certainly buy a laptop, and if you want to run Windows 10, you will need a laptop or a desktop computer, that everything that you said could also be done on a good quality tablet computer. So it's a handheld computer with a touch screen. So if you're not going to be writing long, you know, letters and novels and things like that, you can get away with a tablet. And the benefit is that you don't have to do as much work to keep it safe and functioning. And it's more intuitive because you can touch the screen and swipe and open things by tapping them with your finger. And, you know, you can search the internet and so forth very, very easily. So I would say that unless you want to learn a certain amount about, you know, how to keep a computer safe while you're using it on the internet, I would suggest that you consider a tablet. I would look at, and I don't want to turn this into Apple Hour, and I've said many bad things about Apple in the past, which they often remind me of, but there is the basic iPad, which is, I think, £335 currently and can be had at a discount from time to time, would do everything that you need very well. Bear in mind that you will need a wireless internet connection at home, so you would need to either subscribe to a service where you pay every month for broadband internet into your home, and that would be the best way of doing it. The alternative would be to get a device that can take a cell phone, a SIM card in it, and use mobile data. But if you're going to do anything other than a small amount of data, that can get quite expensive, so you'd have to be a bit careful about that.
Thank you very much. Good luck, Brenda. Connie in Stockwell says, my question is, I can only afford £50. I'd like to know what is the most powerful speaker for a smartphone? I presume that's what, like one you plug in to get a big sound out of
your phone? Yeah, so I would say it's a Bluetooth speaker. I would look at something like a Soundcore Icon spelt with a K, I-K-O-N. If you could go to 75, you get the Icon Plus, which is one of the best speakers at anywhere near that money. But at 50, you can do that. The Soundcore stuff is generally very good. Make sure it's one of the more modern ones, which has the later, you know, at least Bluetooth 5 built into it, because that will give you better battery life. Most of those devices from Soundcore, and there are, you know, obviously other brands as well, but they have the benefit of being waterproof. I dropped one in my bath not so long ago when startled by a spider. Okay. I was having a bath. The spider appeared in the corner of the room, and I thought, it is more afraid of me than I am of it. I will ignore it. And it ignored me, and all was going well until I accidentally tapped the tap, and the vibration freaked out the spider. The spider ran straight into the bathwater. I leapt out of the bathwater, and in went the speaker. The speaker survived. In fact, it carried on playing whilst underwater, although it was somewhat muffled.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, they are designed, a lot of them are designed for that, and some of them come with built-in light shows, so when you want to have your own party during lockdown on your own, you can have all of that. I'd look at the Soundcore range, because they have a very good sort of bang for buck, as it were. You can sort of go for Apple stuff, but it's sort of expensive in the speaker market. You don't need that. The only other thing I would say you could consider is something like an Amazon Dot, which if you've got an internet connection will be a smart speaker for you and has a speaker built in, but the speaker is very basic in that,
right?
You know, and above that it will cost you more than £50.
Okay, we've only got a couple of minutes. Let's see if we can squeeze in Chris in Bournemouth. Hello, Chris.
Yeah, hi, good morning. So I've been DJing on Mixcloud tonight because my nightclub in Leicester Square has been shut for quite some time now. Let's not get into the political reasons of it. So I'm using like a HP laptop to come out of my Pioneer Dex, and I'm streaming to Mixcloud, and sometimes I'm getting, when I listen to it, so basically at the end of the broadcast, you can upload it as a podcast, and I'm getting like echoes and some sort of, where the stream's inconsistent. And when I play it back, sometimes it's fine. So do you think the problem lies within the computer that I'm using to connect to the internet? Do you think that I've got a problem with perhaps the quality of the components in the computer that I'm using to encode? I'm using OBS. Do you know about OBS?
Yeah. I know. Nice free program. Very difficult to use, but yes.
Yeah. No. So I'm using OBS and I'm uploading, and quite often it's good. I know tonight's New Year's Eve, so probably, and I've listened back to this show, and every so often it's like echo.
Right. Okay. So Chris, I'm going to stop you there, because we're going to run out of time, and I'm not going to be able to have a go at answering this. But I think I've got the gist of your question. So if you'll forgive me, if you are getting an echo, it can be because of the way you've set up the system, that you may be hearing the pre and post monitoring. So before it goes through that encoding process, if you're listening to it before and after, you will hear effectively an echo. It could be the setup. It can also be the way that the power of the computer itself, but I think it is not that, because I think you said to me sometimes when you're listening to it, it sounds like echo, but when you actually listen back to what's gone out via OBS, that it's all right. So that tends to suggest to me that it's the way that you've configured it, rather than the machine being too slow. I hope that's of some help.
Thank you very much, Chris. Great to hear that you're keeping something going anyway in these times. Fevzi, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate all that advice. And if you weren't able to get through, you can tweet Fevzi at Gadget Detective, and he'll do his best to answer your question. Apologies to those who were waiting and who texted and we didn't get around to your questions.